everything he had, and Lot went with him. Abram had become very wealthy in livestock and in silver and gold. From the Negev he went from place to place until he came to Bethel, to the place between Bethel and Ai, where his tent had been earlier, and where he had first built an altar. There Abram called on the name of the Lord. Now Lot, who was moving about with Abram, also had flocks and herds and tents. But the land could not support them while they stayed together, for their possessions were so great that they were not able to stay together. Quarrelling arose between Abram's herdsmen, the herdsmen of Lot. The Canaanites and the Perizzites were also living in the land at that time. So Abram said to Lot, "Let's not have any quarrelling between you and me, or between your herdsmen and mine, for we are brothers. Is not the whole land before you? Let's part company. If you go to the left, I'll go to the right. If you go to the right, I'll go to the left." Lot looked up and saw that the whole plain of the Jordan was well watered, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt towards Zoar. This was before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. So Lot chose for himself the whole plain of the Jordan and set out towards the east. The two men parted company. Abram lived in the land of Canaan, while Lot lived among the cities of the plain and pitched his tents near Sodom. Now the men of Sodom were wicked and were sinning greatly against the Lord. The Lord said to Abram, after Lot had parted from him, "Lift up your eyes from where you are, and look north and south and east and west. All the land that you see I will give to you and your offspring forever. I will make your offspring like the dust of the earth, so that if anyone could count the dust, then your offspring could be counted. Go, walk through the length and breadth of the land, for I am giving it to you." So Abram moved his tents and went to live near the great trees of Mamre at Hebron. Many. You think of the different religions, the different philosophies, the different ways of life that we see around us. We think there are many different ways to live your life. And yet that's really a superficial view of the state of men and women. The Bible shows us there are two possibilities, and really only two. There's a path of faith in the living God, following the way that he sets out for men and women to follow. And there's everything else. I'm going to lump all of those other alternatives together, because they're really all the path of unbelief. Two possibilities. And as we turn this evening to Genesis, we will see Canaan. God's brought him back from disobedience and from sin in Egypt, back to the land of Canaan, the land God has promised to him and his descendants, his offspring. And we see another stage in God's gracious dealings with Abram. We're going to look this evening at Genesis 13. We're going to look at the whole chapter, and we give this study the title, Walking by Faith, Walking by Sight. Walking by Faith, Walking by Sight. Here are the two pathways that we've already mentioned. We turn to Genesis 13, and the first thing we see in the record is a necessary separation. A necessary separation. Here is the point where Abram and Lot go their different ways. And there are many significant things happening here in the relationship of Abram and Lot and the Lord. There's perhaps an early sign of difficulty in the record here, because we often read about Abram building an altar at places of spiritual significance. And there he calls on the name of the Lord. There he worships his God. And you find that, for example, here at the beginning of chapter 13, verse 3 and verse 4. He settles for the time being between Bethel and Ai. He goes back to where he had already built an altar, and we're told there Abram called on the name of the Lord. Of course, it's not just once he does it. It's part of his whole life, worshipping the Lord in prayer and so forth. Worship is clearly an essential element of Abram's life. His whole outlook, his whole attitude involves the Lord, worshipping the Lord. And I think we have to ask, is it significant that Lot is never mentioned as being involved in any of this? Now, we must be very careful not to read too much into the passage. Where the Word of God is silent, we must be careful about making any assumptions. Is it simply that Lot was there as well, and it's only Abram who's mentioned? It could be that. And we do need to remember that Lot knew the Lord. 2 Peter 2 and verse 7 speaks of righteous Lot. So we mustn't write him off spiritually. He was a man of some faith, at least. And yet I think it does become clear as Genesis unfolds that Lot is a man of much weaker faith than Abram was. For all Abram's failures, Lot seems spiritually to be quite a way behind the point that Abram had reached. We sense, I think, that Lot really is not the kind of man who will have a part in the life that God has called Abram to follow. Lot isn't that kind of person, spiritually speaking. He is moving around with Abram, according to verse 5. He's there. And yet I think, spiritually speaking, in a sense, Lot really isn't there. He's not where Abram is. And though he has faith, it's a weaker faith. And we need to bear that in mind as we see events unfolding in this chapter. And then the problems really come to a head when they've been in Canaan for a while. Growing prosperity for both of them. Their flocks are growing. God is blessing. And the flocks simply need more room. There isn't space in the area where they are at the present time. And so we read in verse 6 of the chapter, the land couldn't support them while they were staying together, for their possessions were so great, they weren't able to stay together. Well and good, we may say. That's a natural situation. There's nothing surprising there. And then the tensions begin to grow, of course. The herdsmen start to quarrel. Water would be a valuable resource, and there would be pressures on the supplies of water and the wells that would be used to water the flocks. So there are tensions, and there are warnings of worse to follow if something isn't done about it. And so, for the sake of all concerned, they will have to separate. It is a necessary separation that takes place. On the level of economic life, of the welfare of the herds, of the need for water supplies and food supplies, they have to separate. And there's an extra factor, I think, in all of this. Verse 7 says something that's significant. Not just the quarrelling between the herdsmen, but the Canaanites and the Perizzites were also living in the land at that time. Now, they could pose a threat. Abram and Lot really had little or no status in that country. They were nomads. And so at that level, Canaanites and Perizzites could pose danger After all, here are wealthy men, vulnerable men, very attractive victims for attack. But I think something more is going on here. It would be wrong for two men of God to have an open quarrel before unbelievers. It would not be right, spiritually speaking, that these tensions would be allowed to escalate with Canaanites and Perizzites looking on, spectators, watching how these followers of the Lord conduct themselves and how they behave towards each other. They fall out, they fight. Well, the Canaanites, the Perizzites will draw their own conclusions. What sort of a God do these men follow? They can't even get on with each other. We might say, if we want to put it, maybe in New Testament terms, it would be a very bad witness to the pagans for Abram and Lot to allow this quarrel to escalate. It would be harmful. It would be unfitting. It would reflect ultimately on the name of the Lord. It would not just be that the pagans would think badly of Abram and Lot, but it would reflect on their God. And so Abram will not allow that to happen. In verse 8, he seeks peace. There's not going to be a quarrel. We are brothers, he says. And that's true in a physical way. Genetically, they're brothers, but spiritually too, they're brothers, and there ought to be peace among the Lord's people. And of course, you know and I know how the world points the finger when it sees quarrels and disagreements among professing Christians. There are those Christians for you. Look at them, at each other's throats. And of course, it reflects not just on Christians, but on our God. And so we need, spiritually speaking, to beware of the Canaanites and the Perizzites looking on at how we conduct ourselves as Christians, as congregations, as church, because of the conclusions that will be drawn, not simply about us, but about our God. And so there has to be a separation, going in different ways. But we need to understand the spiritual significance of what's happening here. This is not simply a matter of economics or of farming practices. This is spiritual history. We need to understand that once again, Abram's vision of God's promise and its fulfillment to him is being tested. God promised him the whole of this land. Yet here are Canaanites and Perizzites, and now Lot expanding, needing space. And Abram, as he prospers, as he can see around him tokens of God's blessing, could very easily be tempted by that very prosperity, because things are going so well. The flocks, the herds, they're growing. He's becoming a wealthy man. There's a snare there if he's not careful. Would he become wrapped up in these material things, flocks and herds and money and economics and all of that? Will that become the focus of Abram's attention as he prospers? Will he forget about his calling from the Lord and settle for material things? Will obedience to the Lord become less important than pursuing the things of this world? There was real danger for Abram in this situation. We need to understand that. And of course, if God blesses us with prosperity, we've always got to be on our guard that we don't fall in love with material things. That these become the center of life. That God's calling to us to live in obedience, whatever his particular call is, starts to fade into the background and we settle for the material and the things that cannot last. How will God's promise be fulfilled? Here are people living in the land that God said he would give to Abram. How is God going to work out the promise that he has made? And the danger is that in this situation, Abram will start to rely on his own plotting and his own calculations to try and bring about the fulfillment of God's promise. And we'd see later on in Genesis there were times when Abram fell into that sin. When he tried, as it were, to help God's plan along in his own way and by his own wisdom and his own manoeuvring and manipulating. We see what happens with Hagar and the need for an heir. But here is one of the good times, spiritually, for Abram. The temptations to try and help God's plan along by his own wisdom, and trying to be clever and manipulate Lot and so on. Abram rejects all of that. He's not going to assert his rights as the elder man, as he could have done, and try to move Lot to one side where he's not going to be competition or threat. Abram is not going to use the means of this world. He's not going to use worldly wisdom to try and maneuver the situation to help along the promise of the Lord. The faith of Abram shines very clearly in this passage. And you see it there in verse 9. Because what does Abram do? He gives Lot complete freedom of choice. Lot can have any part of the land he wants. And that is an act of faith. We need to see it for what it is. It is an act of faith. Because in doing this, Abram is confident, he's assured, that God will so overrule and will so direct events that the promise that God has made will be fulfilled. Abram is not anxious. He's not afraid. He knows whatever Lot chooses, God's plan will be fulfilled. And so Abram is willing to take the risk, if we can call it that, of allowing Lot to make his choice. And he does it because he trusts the Lord. It's an act of faith when Abraham says, take whatever you want, Lot. Free choice, anywhere you want. Because he knows God's promise won't fail. And so he can be generous. He can make that offer, and he knows the Lord will still work out his plan. Perhaps that visit to Bethel in verse 3 and verse 4 has really strengthened Abram's faith. He's ready for the challenges. His faith has been renewed and refreshed, and he knows God's plan will be worked out. There are the times, perhaps, when we face temptations as we follow the Lord, to try to manipulate situations, to try and help along God's work by our wisdom. You see it sometimes in the work of evangelism, where people feel, well, we have to use methods that we have devised and plans and schemes to get people converted. God's ways aren't really working. We'll use our own wisdom and our own ways and help along God's purpose. Utter folly. Perhaps in our own situations, as God leads us, we find times of pressure, times when we're tempted to leave aside the godly path, to follow ways we know aren't in accord with God's word, because we think it'll advance the way God seems to be leading us and directing us. We sacrifice faithfulness for what seems to be cleverness. And it is always misguided. The world's ways, the world's wisdom, is never the way in which to do God's work. Abram knew that. He didn't always follow it through, but he knew it. And so here, it was a necessary separation. But we see here, secondly, Lot's foolish choice. Lot's foolish choice. And we see a lot, no pun, we see a lot about Lot in the choice that he made. It shows us the heart of the man. There's no indication that he was guided by spiritual concerns, by spiritual values. As far as we can discern from the record, it was a purely materialistic decision. He weighs up the merits of different parts of the land. What portion will be best for my flocks, my herds? Where will I get on best? And that would seem to be the only calculation that Lot made. The whole land's there. It's a testimony to God's promises that he would give the land to Abram and his descendants. And if he continues in the path of faith and the path that Abram is walking, there'd be blessing for Lot as well. He would share in the blessings that would come to Abram if he walks by faith. But Lot, faced with such a choice and such a material opportunity, decides to walk by sight instead of faith. He's not considering the spiritual dimensions and where will be the place of blessing. Surely it would be as close as he could be to Abram, God's chosen. And he doesn't seem to think about his own relationship to God and what will strengthen him spiritually and what will be a help to him. No evidence he sought God's will in this very important decision he was making. And so when he looked out at the land, what he saw really was what he had chosen to see. The material. The things of this world. What offers prosperity? What offers the prospect of greater wealth? How might I flourish and gain greater riches? And yet the path he chooses very clearly leads him further away from God. And it's visible in the road that he's walking, literally. It takes him further away from God. Further away from Abram, the man of faith. Further away from the positive spiritual influences that Abram would have exercised. And yet if he had sought God's face and God's guidance, he would have had a share in the promised blessings. The land and the worldwide blessing would have overflowed to Lot and to his descendants. But he was walking by sight, not by faith. And you see the foolishness of his choice in verse 13. We know, of course, with hindsight, much of what Lot was bringing upon himself. But it's there. It's spelled out for us. The men of Sodom were wicked and were sinning greatly against the Lord. Here's Lot walking down the road to Sodom. And it's not just a journey in which his feet are travelling. His soul is travelling. And it's a downward road. It was literally down to the plain. But spiritually speaking, it's down. Down to the place of ungodliness and disobedience. A place that will bring sorrow upon Lot and his family. He's moving to a place that will encourage spiritual weakness and backsliding and sin. And verse 11, I think, has a very deep significance in the unfolding of the spiritual history of Abram and Lot. Lot chose for himself the whole plain of Jordan, set out towards the east. The two men parted company. Yes, literally they parted company. They walked off in different directions. But surely spiritually they parted company. Abram went on with God and God's way according to the promise. Lot walked away from God to the place where judgment would fall, and Lot himself would barely escape. It was a spiritual decision that he made. In his own wisdom, his own apparent prosperity materially. And he wasn't the first, and he certainly hasn't been the last. How often Christians become wrapped up in the things of this life. How easily material things come to occupy the centre of attention. And that's true, you know, whether you have a lot or little. The poor man can be as materialistic as the rich man. One is materialistic because he has. The other's materialistic because he doesn't have and wants. It's not a matter of how much you have in the bank or anywhere else. It's a matter of your attitude. God's people must always be on their guard. Think of Demas, one of Paul's associates. Out in the mission team, we could say, 2 Timothy 4:10, Demas has forsaken me, having loved this present world. That at times has been the epitaph over Christian workers. I'm not saying they lost salvation, but they lost the vision. They lost their way spiritually. Lot was such a man. We think of Jesus' command in Matthew 6:19, do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth. You'll leave them behind. You must have treasure in heaven. And for all his weaknesses and his failings, Abram had the treasure in heaven, far more important than anything he could have had on earth. And it brings us finally to think of God's encouragement of Abram. You've seen Lot's foolish decision. It was disastrous in every sense. What of Abram? He sees Lot going off down to what is a very prosperous place, a place where there's plenty of encouragement for him, we might say. There's flocks, there's herds, he'll get on well, it appears. And Abram stands and watches. And maybe he wondered, did I do the right thing? I wonder, have I made a mistake? God comes to him graciously and encourages him, strengthens his faith. Abram was walking by faith. He didn't judge on the basis of what his eyes saw. He was guided by trust in the promise of God that one day, in God's way, the land would belong to his descendants. And he knew God would fulfill it. And we have it spelled out for us in Hebrews 11. Hebrews 11 is a very interesting commentary on many of these Old Testament accounts. Hebrews 11 at verse 9, this is what we read. By faith, Abram made his home in the promised land, like a stranger in a foreign country. He lived in tents, as did Isaac and Jacob, who were heirs with him of the same promise. In verse 10, for he was looking forward to the city with foundations, whose architect and builder is God. Abram's hope was not primarily a few square miles of Canaan, or even the entire land of Canaan. That wasn't his focus, and that's what Hebrews 11 is telling us. And that's a warning against being preoccupied with the land, as some Christians are even today. The land, and the land has got to belong to certain people. Abram was not preoccupied with the land. He was looking for a city that God built in it. He wasn't looking for a city built of stone or of brick. It was a spiritual city. His heart was not set on a piece of earthly territory. He was looking to the spiritual fulfillment by faith. We need to understand that if we're going to understand Abram and what God is doing in this man's life. God comes to encourage Abram, to strengthen his faith. God renews the promise of the land, verse 14 and 15. The promise of a vast multitude of seed, I will make your offspring like the dust of the earth, so that if anyone could count the dust, then your offspring could be counted. In grace, God promises blessings beyond any expectations Abram could have had. It'll not simply be a piece of earth. It'll be a spiritual blessing given by grace to a man who couldn't deserve this. Abram couldn't deserve any of it, but he trusted the Lord. And it is faith that is the key. Because who are the offspring of Abram described here? Well, people say, well, it must be the Jews. But the New Testament makes it clear. It's those who believe in the Lord Jesus Christ, whether they're Jews or Gentiles. Faith is the key. The offspring, the seed of Abram, are described by faith in the Lord. And the promise that is given here is the promise of worldwide blessing upon men and women through Christ. The promise of salvation for multitudes. People who will have a share in that city that Abram was looking for. The city of God. And the fulfillment finally of that promise of the land. We'll keep coming back to this. We need to. The final fulfillment of the promise of the land. Revelation 21 verse 1. I saw a new heaven and a new earth. And that is what Abram hoped for. Well, he didn't understand about it, but that's what he hoped for. And that's the fulfillment of the promise of the land. Yes, his physical descendants did receive Canaan. But that was simply a token and a picture of far greater things that God had for his people. New creation in Christ. Abram had seemed perhaps to lose materially by Lot's decision. If you had weighed it up in purely economic terms, you might well have concluded Abram came off worse. Lot got the best land. But in fact, Abram had lost nothing. And he had gained a far clearer revelation of God's promise. God had come and repeated the promise and expanded it. And that's what God keeps doing with Abram. He expands the promise each time it's given. But Abram sees a little more. And a little more. And a little more. He understands how great God's gracious promise really is. And we know that in the world's eyes, Christians often seem to be losers by following the Lord. There are many people all around us in this community who look at Christians like us and they say they're losers. They're living in a fantasy world, believing in a God who doesn't exist, looking forward to a heaven that's never going to happen. They're the losers. And you think of Christians who have been called to leave sometimes home, family, possessions, and obedience to God. Christians who have missed career opportunities because of their faithfulness to God and God's standards of righteousness. Christians who forfeited promotion because of their honesty, their refusal to compromise their principles. And the world says, you're losers. You're fools. The Christian is no fool. The Christian is the only person who is not a fool. It's those who live for the things of this world, it's those who walk by sight who are the losers. Often even in this world, and certainly in the world to come. And it should encourage us when we look at Abram, to remember that faithful obedience to the Lord brings great rewards. Not rewards perhaps that can be measured economically or materially. But reminded in 1 Timothy 6:6, godliness with contentment is great gain. that we're to live in reliance on the promises of God. We're to look at life from a perspective shaped by the Bible, God's view. We're to walk by faith. The world around us is walking by sight, and it's walking to disaster. We, by God's grace, are to walk by faith. We'll have fellowship with the Lord and the hope of glory that's beyond valuation. Are you walking by faith? Are you walking by sight this evening? Are you guided and governed by trust in the Lord and His promises? And you'll follow Him, you'll seek Him whatever the cost. Or are you living by the same values and attitudes of the world around us? Perhaps a superficial veneer of Christianity that might even deceive people. But underneath the values, the attitudes, just the same as the world. Walking by sight. Two paths, two roads. Make sure.